This is a special Trenches Technology podcast series with your host, Sharon Bueno, Managing Editor of Trenches Technology Magazine. We're celebrating 50 years of cured-in-place pipe. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Trenches Technology podcast. We are starting a special series about cured-in-place pipe, marking its golden anniversary. Joining me on the episode today is Lynn Osborne, a longtime and well-respected Trenches expert, particularly in the area of cured-in-place pipe. We're going to get Lynn's perspective on how cured-in-place pipe revolutionized how utility owners and cities and engineers addressed the aging underground infrastructure systems in our country and its impact going forward. So welcome, Lynn. I appreciate you taking some time and talking on the podcast.
Thank you.
Why don't we get started by maybe sharing a little bit about your background and how you got started in trenches technology?
Well, after high school, I went to college and got a degree in biology and chemistry. And then after a tour in the Army, I knew I wanted to do something different. So I went back to school, and that's when I found civil engineering. So after I got my degree, I started work with a consulting engineer in water and sewer work, both plants and pipes. And I was with them for 9 years, great company. I did a lot of interesting things, but I wanted to get out in the field more, have more to do with construction. So I had learned about the in situ form process and went to see a job in St. Louis and ended up working for them. I started in January of 1984 and worked there for 31 years. And at the end of 2014, I retired from in situ form, started my own consulting company, and have been doing consulting on a part-time basis ever since, mostly with NASCO as a technical advisor to NASCO. So that's my path to this trenchless technology.
And you mentioned in situ form. Can you talk to us and fill us in a little bit on how the history of cured in place, how it got started?
Yeah, it all started with Eric Wood. Eric Wood was the inventor. You know, I look back on it, I wish I had talked to Eric more about how he got it started. But unfortunately, we lost Eric in a plane crash. The lore goes, he was an agricultural engineer, and he was working for a mushroom farmer. And the mushrooms are grown inside buildings, and there was ductwork above the mushroom beds. And the ductwork was corroding, and condensation was dripping on the mushrooms. And he was hired to fix that problem. In studying that, that's where he came up with the concept of cured-in-place pipe. Of course, CIPP, cured-in-place pipe, that phrase didn't exist until many, many years later. So Eric did that in 1969, 1970. He joined with two other gentlemen, Doug Chick and Brian Chandler, for purposes of starting a business and financing a business. And with Doug and Brian, they started in situ form international pipes and structures. They started several different companies and started selling licenses. The first job they did was for Thames Water in 1971. And it was an egg-shaped sewer, still in service today. It's been tested many times. And after that, they started propagating this new technology, actually globally.
That's interesting how it got started. It had nothing to do with water and sewer pipes.
Correct. Yeah, it was mushrooms.
So that was in 1971. I know the SIP process didn't come to North America till the mid-70s, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. It was actually 1976. Fresno, California. A lot of things started out in Fresno, California in general, but it was a 12-inch sewer. I believe they called it the Zoo Sewer, and it was inspected several years ago, and as far as I know, still in service.
Can you talk a little bit about the early years of the SIP process, what kind of work they were doing when they first discovered that this could work with water and sewer lines?
Yeah, for me, I know when I joined in situ form of North America, you've heard the phrase, it was like drinking from a fire hose. There was so much to learn. And I traveled around a lot helping licensees with various products. Everybody was trying to get started up. 6 months after I joined In Situ Form, I was on job sites as the expert. And I know that that sounds crazy today, but that's the way things were evolving 35 years ago, whatever that was. People were learning on the go. We were all cowboys at the time. There weren't hardly any written procedures, and there was just so much to take in, but it was actually a very fun time.
What do you remember about those early days, specifically when you were going out to these cities and utility owners trying to tell them, this is the best way to do this. You should be doing it this way. We have this great new, not new, but relatively new process. What was the feedback you were getting?
Well, there was a lot of resistance for several reasons. It was new, and civil engineers in general are a conservative group and hesitant to try new things, although there are exceptions. There were some that were really ready to jump in, and they did. But it was new, and it was proprietary. In Situ Form was the only game in town, and a lot of municipalities, potential customers, were reluctant to specify a proprietary product. There were the consulting engineers. A lot of the bigger customers wouldn't specify cured-in-place pipe unless their consulting engineer agreed and specified the cured-in-place pipe. So in the late 80s, we developed a program to market to consulting engineers to get them involved. And then, of course, it was considered expensive 30, 35 years ago. And so that was a little bit of a barrier to startup.
In your mind, when did cured-in-place become the preferred method? A lot of people talk about the hesitation because it was one of the reasons it was proprietary. Did it become more preferred after the patents expired? Was that the tipping point for this method?
Yeah, probably. I would say it's hard to put a number on that, but probably in the mid-1990s, some of the very important in situ form patents expired in the mid-1990s. More competitors came online. This opened the market up because now some of these cities would specify it because there was more than one bidder. Also, with the new competition, there was much more product going in the ground. This drove the prices down. So, again, that opened it up to more people buying it, specifying it. So, yeah, probably mid-1990s, it really became mainline, I would say.
How has the SIP process evolved over the last 50 years? I mean, how has it changed from those early years to where and how it's done now? What are some of the changes?
Well, there have been a lot. Probably foremost, just new and better materials. You know, when we started up, we were buying resins from resin companies that were basically off the shelf and then formulating to fit cured-in-place pipe. Now there are CIPP resins. Also tube materials, much better tube materials now. But installation techniques, most everything 35 years ago was water cure. Now we have steam cure, a light cure, a lot of things opening up. Installation techniques. When we wanted to do a small diameter line, which most everything was small diameter 35 years ago, we'd put up 25 or 30 feet of scaffolding so we could develop enough water pressure to install it. Well, now you have workers up there in the air, in the elements, in the power lines. It was very dangerous. You had to put the scaffolding up, take the scaffolding down. Now the smaller diameters are installed with pressure vessels that are carried around in the back of pickup trucks or on a small trailer. So all of these things led to better production. And better production, you think about a crew that 35 years ago was putting in 1,500 feet a week. Well, now they might put in a mile a week. So same crew, similar equipment, three times as much production. It's going to drive prices down. And it did. And so now with better pricing, it just helps with the market. So those have been some of the, and also I would say pressure pipe. Pressure pipe has really come online. Both for gas, water, and sewer, with better materials, better products, that's been a huge innovation.
I mean, tapping on that as well, how has the safety protocols changed for over the last 50 years regarding cured in place?
Well, that's a very good question, because 50 years, or I don't remember the 50 years ago, but say 35 years ago, there were some safety protocols, but it wasn't adequate. I'll put it that way. And now most companies have very good safety procedures, and it's a very good thing, because sewer work, as most people know, is very dangerous. There's hardly any work more dangerous than sewer work. So the safety protocol, most of the larger companies have safety people on staff, somebody in charge of corporate safety. I know at NASCO, safety is number one, and we've been dealing with a lot of issues for the industry. So it's become very, very important, as it should.
Can you talk a little bit about who some of the cured in place pioneers were? I don't mean to age you in any way, but you've been in the industry a very long time and worked with a lot of phenomenal people who have shaped the industry and grew the industry and innovated the industry. Beyond Eric Wood, who are some of the pioneers that are out there?
Yeah, of course, Eric. And I'm just so happy I got to work with Eric for 10 years. That was very rewarding. But I mentioned Doug Chick and Brian Chandler. Eric could not have started the business without them. They helped with the business, the financing, helped them get it going. Of course, I know more about North America than I do Europe. It really started going in Europe first, but then it came to North America. The UK company had licensees in North America. And then in 1980, a new company was started, Insituform of North America, to procure licenses in the United States to start out with. And there was a gentleman, Al Coulthorpe, who was there from the beginning. He was going around marketing licenses throughout the United States, did a tremendous amount of work, and stayed in the business for decades. Certainly consider him a pioneer. Some of the licensee owners, Art Lang, it was a public company, but Art Lang, I believe he was president of Insituform East, a very colorful character. He's the one that got WSSC online early. Very big in the business, Bob Affolder, Affolder Tunneling. He bought a license in either 1981 or 82 and started Insituform Mid-America. Very important. Ken Foster worked mostly in Canada, the United States, and some in Europe. And Ken is, I believe, still in the business. Ken's always going to retire, but I think he's still out there. Very much a pioneer. And, of course, Bob and Ken are both in the NASTT Hall of Fame. NASTT Hall of Fame.
As are you.
Chris Mason, thinking about consultants, as I mentioned, it was hard to get some of them involved, but there were a few early pioneers, and I'd put Chris Macy at the start of that list. Chris Macy in Winnipeg, Canada. He's been working with cured in place pipes since something like 1977. Just a tremendous amount of knowledge in the product and the design, and he's still working with it today. There are so many. I'll mention one other, a guy I worked with at Insituform now, Aegion, Rick Baxter. He started a year after I did at Insituform in North America, and he's still with Aegion some 35 years later. Tremendous knowledge in design and installation. In fact, he ran Aegion's pressure pipe field business for several years, so he's got tremendous knowledge in pressure pipe. But those are just some of the people. I know there are many, many more.
And a lot of them are still out there working. Like you said, Ken Foster, Chris Macy, they're still actively involved in this industry. A lot of institutional memory right there.
Exactly.
I mean, you mentioned that. I mean, a lot of these guys are also in the NASTT Hall of Fame for their contributions, as are you in the Hall of Fame.
I didn't realize that when I was putting that list together, but yeah, you're right.
How has cured in place shaped and impacted the rehab market? I mean, what would have been done? I think we talked about this before. If this process hadn't come about, what would have happened to the underground? How would they have addressed the underground infrastructure needs?
Well, you know, who knows? Before CIPP, there was slip lining, grouting, shotcrete for larger entry size sewers, or you dug it up and replaced it. Those were the options, all good processes, but those were the options that were available when CIPP started. But if you look at it, when CIPP started, especially in North America, because it got to North America 5 years after it was invented, but North America became the huge market the quickest. It made the market. CIPP is the market. With the CIPP success, other products came online, were invented, folded pipe, spiral wound pipe, spray-on products, pipe bursting, all of these came along after CIPP. A lot of things were needed to do cured-in-place pipe. CCTV, television cameras were needed. Now, TV cameras were around many years before cured-in-place pipe, but after cured-in-place pipe, they really started improving. We started seeing mini cams come on board for sewer work, for lateral work. And now look at the cameras when you go to these trade shows that are on the market today. They're just phenomenal with what they could do. You know, we had analog black and white cameras that looked straight ahead. They didn't have wheels on them. You hook cables to them and pull them around. And now look at what's on the market. We needed sewer robots. The first CIPP, in order to reconnect the house service laterals, you dug up the connection. There was no other way to do it. So we needed robots to go in and cut that connection open. The first robot we used in North America was called the Underground Robot, developed in Fresno, California. And we used it for years. It was a brute. But like I said, it wasn't a tractor. It was black and white, and it was analog. Now go to these trade shows and look at the robots that are available. It's just amazing. So I see CIPP as the catalyst for all of that work.
And it's the biggest part of the trenchless market, CIPP.
Yes, yeah, and it's huge.
Can you talk a little bit about what the CIPP market is like today? I mean, I know it's hard to put a dollar amount on something like that, but all those things you just described that are spawned off CIPP, but can you talk a little bit about what just the market is today?
Yeah, you're right. It's just huge, and I can't put a dollar amount on it, but I know when I was with In Situ Forum, we tried to keep track of it, but it was becoming more and more difficult. The sewer market, speaking of sewers only, is mature. It's a mature market, probably growing. You know, the surveys I see, it's growing slowly, some, but it's not growing significantly, but it's huge. The pressure pipe market is not nearly as large, but it's continuing to develop new products and grow. And I'm talking all three, gas, water, and sewer. Mm-hmm. So that will continue to grow. I don't think it'll ever be as big as the sewer market, but there is growth there in the pressure pipe market.
Is there a word or anything you could use to describe the cured-in-place market growth over the years? I mean, you had like the early years to where it became accepted and then exploded onto the scene, sort of, to where it is now. How would you describe it?
Yeah, even when I first started, when it really wasn't mainstream or before it was widely accepted, but in those early years with In Situ Forum in North America, the market was doubling every year. Of course, that type of growth can't be maintained, and that growth rate gradually decreased over the years through the late 1980s and 1990s until the market matured. And I don't really know when that was, probably sometime after the turn of the century. But the market became very large, and it's still growing, I'd say, marginally, not a lot of growth, but there's still probably some very small growth. But it's a huge market. To give you an idea, the company I work for, Aegion, now does more work every day than the company I worked for did on an annual basis in the mid-1980s. So it's just become a huge market.
You talked a little bit about some of the innovations to the process in the market over the years. What, in your mind, were the biggest ones, the game changer type innovations?
Yeah, probably the materials and the installation techniques. Like I mentioned, we now have materials that are manufactured and marketed resins for the CIPP product, and the same for tubes. Now we have several manufacturers of tubes and resins too. The robots, I talked about the robots, they're just fantastic now. And all the different, in addition to just inspection, you can evaluate sewers with different types of technology, lasers, for example. Pressure pipe, gas, water, and sewer, I still don't feel like we're there. I think there will be huge innovations in pressure pipe. I think there will be products we haven't even thought of. It's going today. There are great products out there. But I think the best days of pressure pipe are still to come. Large diameter pipe, there was a time when anything above 60 inch for a sewer job or CIPP was what I would call a Hail Mary type job. It was all hands on deck, and sometimes it could become a fire drill. Now, those are more routine with better installation equipment, better resins. I know one of the big resin manufacturers is now marketing a low viscosity resin for these thicker tubes. It wets out quicker. Speeds up the job, which anytime you can get it in the ground quicker, you have less chance of failure. So these are all innovations that are continuing to develop the market.
Is it hard to believe that Cured in Place has turned 50? I mean, how important, I guess, is a milestone like this for an industry?
Well, it's huge. I remember when in 1991, it dawned on us that 1971 installation was 20 years old, and it's just hard to believe it's been in the ground 20 years. So we did what any good group of engineers would do. We went to Thames Water and we went down the manhole and cut a piece out of it and tested it. And we did that again at 30 years, and I think again at 35 years. And all the test results were excellent. And I hope somebody tests it again next year at 50 years. But yeah, it's really hard to believe that next year it will be 50 years.
Yeah, at the time of this taping, we're still in 2020. And this will be obviously released in 2021. Eric Wood, I mean, he can't probably even imagine that this little thing he created in 1971 has exploded to what this industry is.
Yeah, Eric would have been amazed. I know he would have, because when he died was about the times those major patents were expiring. So he didn't see the big explosion. Mm. It would have been interesting. I always wonder what Eric would have invented had he not left us.
So in your mind, what's ahead for Cured in Place? You're still active in the industry. It still excites you. So what do you see going forward?
Well, for the sewer market, it will continue to remain an extremely valuable tool in the toolbox for pipeline rehabilitation. I know sometimes the sewer product is pushed aside because it's kind of old hat now and it's routine, but it's still out there. It's a huge market. I would expect some more innovations in materials and installation and cure techniques. I know light cure continues to evolve with different types of light, different types of installation, different types of tubes. I think we'll see more of that, but there will be many more innovations. But for pressure, the innovations will probably be off the chart. Again, for sewer, water, and gas. New markets, new installation techniques, new products, all of those will expand the pressure pipe market. However, that said, the workhorse for the CIPP companies, those people out there putting the product in the ground, will continue to be the gravity sewer product, because I know it's the one that pays the bills for a lot of these companies.
And for whatever's forward, you'll be there to see it. because you're never going to retire, Lynn.
Oh, yes, I am.
The sooner the better.
Oh, that was my wife, if you heard.
Well, I want to thank my guest, Lynn Osborne, for joining us today. To read more about Cured in Place Pipe Turning 50, check out our January 2021 issue of Trenchless Technology. You'll find it in your mailbox, inbox, or online at trenchlesstechnology.com. This has been a Trenchless Technology podcast. To hear more of my conversations about the trenchless industry, go to trenchlesstechnology.com/podcast.